boys and the teacher at some stage go back and ordain for a short period of time as a kind of a gratitude, you know, for, you know, getting out alive. That'll be one, I think, that they will probably do. I would guess, culturally, that would be.
Can you go in and out of being ordained?
Yeah, you can, yeah. Like? Yeah. I've done it like myself. I've done it in the past. Like, I just gave it a go for a while, you know.
Generally, that was good around about 13, 14. And then they go going again before they get married.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Like, and in Burma, like, it's very common even for married people to go in. Like, I've seen there was a doctor I used to go to in Burma, and like, they had a big family portrait in his office, and it was like this whole mob of people ordained, women and men, and young and old, and it was his whole family, like three generations had all ordained. So, like, in they have what they call the water festival, which is in April. That's a new year for a lot of Buddhist countries. And at that time, you get about 10 public holidays in Burma. It's the only time of the year where there's a bit of time off. And at that time, they all mob into the temples and monasteries, and they will take ordination. And they will normally do this by age of the family member. So, you know, granddad is ordained first, and it'll go down the line, down to grandson. And they'll all go in a line, and they'll shave their heads and wear the robes, and, you know, so they'll have their kit, the robe kit and bowl, like, kept in a special place in the house. And every year they'll go and, you know, take it down and go off and get ordained for their holidays, you know, for a few days. Yeah. So I was quite impressed by this myself. That was the first time I ordained. I was meditating in Burma, and I was looking at them, and I thought, you know, I'll give that a go. It seems to be really helpful. You know, when all the sailors would come back, a lot of the poor sailors in these tugboats and bunker ships and whatnot in the Indian Ocean are Burmese. They're like I think they're lower than the Filipinos in pay rates. And they're at sea for several years, and it's an extremely rough life, you know, for these guys. And you know, when they come back, they're literally black. They're literally very, very dark, you know, in complexion and in perspective. And, you know, they're married, and, you know, God only knows what they've been doing for four or five years at sea, you know. So, like, to detoxify them, they're basically taken from port into the monasteries, and they have to ordain. And, like, they can't even bend over, like, they're so, you know, like, sort of angry with themselves and whatnot. And they would come in, and the monastery I was staying at was really, really strict in how you wore the robes. Like, that was it. Like, if your robe wasn't perfect, you had to be rewrapped. And these guys, like, these robes, they might look, I mean, you've seen Ajahn Brahm, like, they're sort of, you're used to, if you're not taking care of these robes, they will fall right off of you, you know what I mean? And these sailors, like, man, it was almost like repels, you know. And it was really sweet. We would have a lot of them come into the monastery, like, and I'm talking about 800. I'm not talking small numbers of people. Like, we would have 12 people in a hut. So every physical space would be taken up on the ground. You know, we would just sleep on the ground, and the whole floor was covered. And we'd have the young novices as well, like, so you'd get a few more of those into a hut. And our job was to go down and make sure that they hosed, you know, because they wouldn't wash for several days, you know, the typical kids, you know. And but they were really sweet. And like, I have memories of, like, seeing, like, 800 of these, like, walking in a line, like, exactly according to when they ordained and all this kind of thing. And we'd have girls. We have about 300 girls, something like that, 300 or 400 girls. And it's very beautiful to see, actually, like, a large group moving in cadence together. And so that was really inspiring to me, you know, to see the kind of very quick benefits that people got. And the robes used to fall off of these monks. So all the senior monks would be, like, strategically, you know, like, you know, spaced out across the monastery. So when these people would be walking, the robe would fall off, and it was almost like a Russian doll act. Like, there would be another monk, senior monk there, wrap them, then they would just walk on and it would fall off and there'd be another one behind and wrap them again. But just his kindness of being constantly, you know, very kindly and gently, like a baby being rewrapped, just broke down these like really heavy like crust over their heart, and they would really become very much more soft and kind over those like 3, 5, 7 days, and then they would disrobe again and go home. And otherwise they would just be like at the back of the meditation hall smoking and chewing betel nut, which is quite disgusting, let me tell you. You know, it's quite gross. You know, you get this really bloody kind of spit out of them. Like you could have a bucket and you could fill it with the amount of spit. And that's what they'd be doing for the whole time of meditation. So they'd do 20 minutes of sitting down restless, and then 20 minutes of go out and have a smoke and chat with their friends, and 20 minutes of walking around, and that was their hour or so, you know. But I was very inspired by how much it would detoxify them, you know, from these like really like battered sailors to some sort of semi-human that you could send home to their family, their wives and kids again. Okay, so we'll just start with a chant. It's a beautiful chant on loving kindness. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise will later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born. May all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as the mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the divine abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. So, meditation is a translation. It's a word that we use to describe what the Buddha called bhavana. Bhavana means to cultivate. So you bhavana, you cultivate rice or you cultivate cattle. So when they were translating this word in the 1800s, these Oxford professors thought this sounds a little bit too hippie for them, you know, you're cultivating your heart. And so they thought, well, you know, we'll use this other word from the Christian tradition, which is to meditate. And in Christianity, normally you meditate on a verse from the Bible, you dwell on it, you contemplate it, and you kind of go into its deeper meaning. So, but it really means cultivation, you know. And I think after 150 years since the coining of this word meditation, in reference to what we're going to do, we can cultivate our different kind of mind states. And I saw a slogan on a bag which is attributed to Ajahn Brahm, which is something like, you water the good plants and you don't water the weeds. So the last time I was here, I did a guided meditation, which was really on acknowledging the suffering that's going on in our life and grieving it, and using, in a way, using grief, cultivating a grief, a healthy sense of grief, to embrace that suffering. But I mentioned that I'd like to give a go at a different contemplation or a different aspect that we can pick up on. Again, it's being opportunistic, because we don't always feel suffering either. Sometimes we're having a good day, like I mentioned. I didn't get to see the World Cup, but I can imagine it, or I was reading the newspaper report on it. And sometimes we can just cultivate that joy from the achievement of others, the success of others, you know, the kids coming out, getting out of the cave. And we can sort of leverage these situations that are going on to cultivate happy mind states as well. And so what I'd like you to do is to sit comfortably, because we're going to be doing a guided meditation for the next few minutes. So that means if there's something that's sticking in your ribs or something that's too tight, just sit comfortably. Again, meditation is not in the body, it's in the mind, it's in the heart. So please don't worry too much about your posture being, you know, some sort of cross-legged painful thing. Just whatever is at ease. And I like to practice with my eyes closed, but you can practice with them open if you like. And I'd just like you to recall an incident. Many of us can think of a time where we dropped our kids off at school. And you know, when we drop the kids off at school, like maybe our kids are wearing a school uniform, and they get out of the car, and you know, this son or daughter or niece or nephew or child, you can borrow any child you like to do that. I don't have children myself, so I have to borrow somebody else's child for this purpose. And I just imagine that I'm driving to a school or to a school event, like a sports event, and I'm dropping the child off, and you know, the child is really excited, and you know, maybe you have the door on child lock and you pull up the car and you have to get out and open the door for them. And they're togged off, they're ready to go, they're in their uniform, their school, maybe their school kit, you know, they have their sports gear on. And they just run out of the car to go join their friends. They've already figured out where their friends are. And this child of yours that is so unique and wonderful and special merges into this whole group, this team. So this unique, wonderful and special child of yours is also now just part of a greater whole, part of a greater group, part of a greater community, part of a greater team. So this unique, wonderful and special child of yours transforms into just another member of the team, the community, the club. And maybe you just go over and join the parents, the supporters. You are going to join and cheer for your team of little children, or your team of sports, whoever it is. This is where we are now. We're just going to be in the supporters' stand, and we're just going to root for our team. So this unique, wonderful and special child of ours is also part of this whole, part of this greater community, part of this greater team. This child that is so unique, wonderful and special to us is just another member of the team. And we too, who we are unique, wonderful and special, but we too are just part of the parents, part of the teachers, part of the support, just all of us are rooting for the team, and every now and again we can see our little kid, their head is bobbing up and down and running around after the ball. Sometimes I like to think of the kids as being about 7 or 8 when they can't play in position yet, and they're all just running after the ball. It's a bit of a mess, but we love them all the same, and maybe one day they'll be a great soccer player or sports player or football player. But for the moment, it doesn't matter. They're all one mass. And sometimes we get it mixed up. We think our kid is in fact what it is somebody else's kid. We're confused. But that doesn't matter. We're still rooting for our team, for our color, for our flag. So this is the transition I want you to see. Unique, wonderful, and special to community, to just another teammate, to just another one of the team. Unique, wonderful, and special, but also just part of the team, part of the community, part of this group, part of this greater whole. Unique, wonderful, and special, but also part of a greater whole, part of a greater team. And we can see this with all of our 13 kids, or the 12 kids and the teacher, the little boars, each one unique, wonderful, and special, but they are also part of a greater team, part of a greater whole, part of a greater identity. Or the soccer team, each member, each player is unique, wonderful, and special, but also part of a greater team, part of a greater whole, part of a greater identity, representing their nation, representing their culture, their values. Unique, wonderful, and special, but part of a greater team, part of a greater whole, part of a greater... So I'd like to just start to scan down through my own body parts. So I'm going to just scan from head to toe to the different parts. And as I go, I'm just acknowledging each area and each part of my body. So the top of my head is unique, wonderful, and special. No other part of my body is exactly like it. But it too is part of a greater team, part of a greater whole, part of a greater body. So I just know or have a sense of the area that I'm talking about. I'm talking to in a kind way. The back of my head is unique, wonderful, and special. No other part of my body is exactly like the back of my head. But it too is part of a greater whole, part of a greater team, part of a greater body. The right side of my head is unique, wonderful, and special. But it too is part of a greater whole, part of a greater body, part of a greater team. The left side of my head, it's similar to the right, but not identical, it's not the same. The left side of my head is unique, wonderful, and special. But it too is part of a greater team, part of a greater whole, part of a greater body. The front of my head, my forehead, is unique, wonderful, and special. So I'm bringing the sentiment towards my own forehead, that it is unique, wonderful, and special, and I appreciate the forehead for what it is. But it too is also part of this greater team, part of this greater whole, part of this greater body. And my eyes are unique, wonderful, and special. My eyes that look out on the world and can see and bring vision, they are unique, wonderful, and special, these eyes. But they too are just part of a greater team, part of a greater whole, part of a greater body. My nose is unique, wonderful, and special. No other part of the body can smell like my nose can do. My mouth is unique, wonderful, and special for its taste and its smile and its food and eating and speaking. My neck is unique, wonderful, and special. It too is part of a greater body. It is unique, wonderful, and special, but it too is part of this greater team, this greater whole, this greater body, holding the head up. My left and right shoulders, maybe I can just imagine I've been shopping and I put down the weight of the shopping bags, let any tension out of my shoulders. letting go of any shopping bags, consciously putting down any tension from my shoulders. My shoulders are unique, wonderful and special, but they too are part of this greater team, part of this greater whole, part of this greater body. My left and right arms are unique, wonderful and special, their ability to carry, to lift. My arms are unique, wonderful and special, but they too are also part of this greater whole, part of this greater body, part of this greater team. My hands are unique, wonderful and special. I can see myself giving and receiving with my hands. My hands are unique, wonderful and special. So skillful at looking after my body, cleaning, feeding myself, helping, skillful things. My hands are unique, wonderful and special, but they too are just part of this greater whole, part of this greater body, part of this greater life of mine. My chest is unique, wonderful and special. My chest holds the lungs and the heart. My chest is unique, wonderful and special. No other part of the body is exactly like my chest. But it too is part of this whole, this greater body, this greater organism, this greater self, this greater me. My stomach and intestines are unique, wonderful and special. No other part of the body can break down the food and digest the food and bring it in and give myself strength. My stomach and intestines are unique, wonderful and special, but they too are part of this greater whole, part of this greater body. My back and spine, upper spine, middle spine and back, lower back, all unique, wonderful and special. No other part of the body can hold me upright like my back and spine can do. My back is unique, wonderful and special. But it too is part of this greater whole, part of this greater organism, part of this greater body. My pelvis and hips are unique, wonderful and special. They give great strength and rigidity to my body. My pelvis and hips are unique, wonderful and special, but they too are part of this greater whole, part of this greater body, part of this greater community. My thighs are powerful muscles that help me lift and stand and walk and move and lie down and swim. My thighs are unique, wonderful and special, but they too are part of this greater community of body, this greater community that I live in. My thighs are unique, wonderful and special, but they too are part of something, a team, a community. My knees and shins are unique, wonderful and special. They bend and flex. They put a spring in my step on a beautiful winter's morning. My shin and knees are unique, wonderful and special, but they too are part of this greater body, part of this greater community, part of this greater whole. My feet are unique, wonderful and special, the heel, ankle, foot and toes, all unique, wonderful and special, but they too are just part of a greater body, part of a greater community, part of a greater whole. Now if I put all these parts of my body back together again, the feet, the legs, the torso, the arms, the neck and the head, this body of mine is unique, wonderful and special, just like that child that we released and let run around the pitch with all of his or her friends in a mob. I am unique, wonderful and special. But I too am part of this community, part of this group here tonight in this room, part of Armadale, part of Perth, part of WA, part of Australia. So this body and mind of mine tonight is unique, wonderful and special. But it too is also part of this greater community, part of this greater whole, part of this greater body here tonight. And all of us in this room tonight, we are unique, wonderful and special to be putting aside our evening here tonight to meditate and cultivate a beautiful heart, a calm and peaceful heart. This body of meditators here tonight is unique, wonderful and special. But we too are part of our community, part of our families, part of our colleagues, part of this wider place that we live in here in Armadale tonight, in Perth, in WA, in Australia. And this city of Armadale tonight is unique, wonderful and special. No other place in the world is quite like it. But it too is part of this greater community, part of this greater city, part of this greater state, part of this great country. And Perth is unique, wonderful, and special. We're just expanding it out wider like ripples in a pond. This sense of time and place and space, this paradox of being unique, wonderful, and special, but part of a greater community, part of a greater whole. Perth is unique, wonderful, and special. No other place in the world is exactly like Perth. But Perth is part of WA, and WA is part of Australia. This beautiful city of Perth is unique, wonderful, and special, but it too is part of this greater community, part of this greater whole, part of this greater planet. And Australia is unique, wonderful, and special. This lucky country, this beautiful red country, continent, island, unique, wonderful, and special. But it too is part of this greater region, part of this greater planet. And surrounding Australia tonight, we have our neighbours. We have New Zealand and Indonesia. And our neighbours are unique, wonderful, and special. Our neighbours are unique, wonderful, and special. But they too are just part of this greater region, part of this greater planet Earth. And if we move north up through Southeast Asia, again, if we think about Southeast Asia, Malaysia, Singapore, Thailand, where the little boys were, Burma, Laos, Cambodia, this whole region, the Philippines. Unique, wonderful, and special. Each area is unique, wonderful, and special. The food, the people, the climate, the animals, the plants, the geology, the waters, the temperature, the sun. Unique, wonderful, and special. But it too is part of the greater region, part of the greater world. And if we track west following the sun, we come to South Asia, to India, Sri Lanka, Pakistan, Nepal, Burma, Bangladesh, this whole region. So South Asia, again, is unique, wonderful, and special. But it too is part of this greater community, part of this greater planet Earth, part of this greater whole. And if we pass through the Middle East, we're going further west following the sun. So the whole Middle East, from Afghanistan through Iran, Iraq, to Syria, Israel, Palestine, Yemen, Lebanon, this whole region of the Middle East is unique, wonderful, and special. But it too is part of this greater whole, part of this greater planet Earth, part of this greater community of humanity, of cultures, of this whole planet Earth that we live on. And if we go further west, we come to Africa, from Egypt to Morocco to South Africa, the whole continent of Africa, unique, wonderful, and special. The animals, the people, the music, the dance, unique, wonderful, and special. But Africa too is part of this greater community, part of this greater whole, part of this greater world. And moving north through Europe, from the boot of Italy to Scandinavia, from Portugal to Turkey, from Russia to Ireland, this whole of Europe is unique, wonderful, and special. Each area different, each people, each group, each language, each food, culture, everything unique, wonderful, and special. But it too is part of a greater community, part of a greater whole, part of a greater world that we live in. We cross over to the Americas, North America, Central America, South America, the whole of the Americas, unique, wonderful, and special. The whole of the Americas, unique, wonderful, and special. But it too is just part of this greater community, part of this greater whole, part of this greater world. And we come to China, the Far East, Japan, Korea, Mongolia, Vietnam. The whole of the Far East is unique, wonderful, and special in history and time and food and culture, you name it, it's unique. But it is also part of this greater community, part of this greater whole, part of this greater world. And if we step back from this planet Earth, we see it as an ocean-filled planet with the polar caps, the North Pole, the South Pole, the islands, the Red Island of Australia, the Cloudy Island of New Zealand, the Hourglass of the Americas, the great landmasses of Europe and the Russias. Each area is unique, wonderful, and special. But this whole planet Earth, it's like a baby, and we can cradle it in our arms. This baby of this planet Earth is unique, wonderful, and special. But as we look around, we can see that this planet Earth is also part of a whole solar system, and part of a whole galaxy, and a part of all the stars all around us, in all directions. This planet Earth is unique, wonderful, and special. It's our home. It's what supports our life. But it too is part of this greater solar system, part of this greater Milky Way galaxy, which is part of just one of the many galaxies in this whole universe. And I like to go over to where the sun is and lie down in it, like it was some sort of Lilo floating in a swimming pool. But you can pick your favorite couch or sofa, and just imagine that that's what the sun is like, and we can just rest here in the sun. And just as the sun is radiating its light in all directions, outwards and unbounded, so too in every direction I can appreciate that every star, every galaxy that I see in every direction is unique, wonderful, and special. But it too is part of this greater universe and part of this greater experience that I'm having of being here and now in this time and this place. And each breath, if I bring my attention or put my hand on my belly, breathing in and breathing out, each breath is unique, wonderful, and special. So just as I'm lying here in this place in the sun, as I breathe in, each breath is unique, wonderful, and special. And it's connecting me with this whole universe all around me in all directions. Unique, wonderful, and special. But it's just part of this life that I'm leading, each breath, one to the next to the next. Each breath is unique, wonderful, and special, but it's part of the continuum of my life. Breathing in and breathing out. Breathing from here, breathing in the whole universe, breathing out the whole universe. Unique, wonderful, and special, but also part of this greater community, part of this greater whole, part of this greater connection between myself and this whole universe around me. This connection, direct connection that I have through my breath with the whole universe around me. So just bringing more and more my attention into the breath, and as I've draw my attention into the breath, I'm drawing in the whole universe. And as I breathe in, I breathe in the universe, and as I breathe out the universe. Just like a light, this radiant energy, just as the sun is radiating light in all directions, so too I can bring a light into my mind of my connection with this self, this unique, wonderful, and special self that is happening. But also this paradox that the self is just part of the whole universe around in all directions. Unique, wonderful, and special, but yet part of this whole community. Unique, wonderful, and special, but just part of this whole community. Outwards and unbounded, freed from any hatred or ill will. Unique, wonderful, and special, but part of this whole universe, all around in all directions. Unique, wonderful, and special, but part of this whole universe. breathing in and breathing out. With each breath, I breathe in the universe. With each exhalation, I breathe out the universe, connecting between self and other, and other and self. Wonderful and special, a part of this whole universe. Staying with my breath as I breathe in and breathe out. This connection between self and the world and self. Just staying with this experience of pressure increasing as I breathe in and decreasing as I breathe out. The inflation and the deflation of the breath, the experience of breathing, knowing that this experience of change in pressure, change in tension within the body is like an umbilical cord between self and the universe and universe and self, and that there is no separation, and in a way there is no self and there is no universe, there is just this unique experience of being alive, being present in my life right now, breathing in and breathing out, being at peace with the world, being at peace with the self. And no barrier between self and the world and the world and self. Just this continuous experience of giving and receiving and receiving and giving. Breathing in and breathing out. Unique, wonderful and special. A part of this whole, part of this greater universe. Part of this greater community, part of this greater body. Interbeing, inter-are. This connection between self and the universe and universe and self. There is no disconnect. even as a mother would protect with her life her child, her only child, so too with each in-breath I breathe in the world, with each out-breath I connect with the world. Breathing in, unique, wonderful and special. Breathing out, part of this whole, part of this greater team, part of this greater world. This interbeing, inter-are, interconnectedness between this self and others, and others and this self. Just here, from here, connecting with the whole universe, this experience that I call myself is just unique, wonderful and special. Is unique, wonderful, and special. This is also part of the whole, part of the universe, part of the team, part of the community. Unique, wonderful, and special. Part of this greater whole, part of this greater universe. Connecting with this breath, unique. Each breath is unique, wonderful, and special. But it's also part of this greater whole, this greater body. just feeling the peace, the underlying peacefulness of this present moment, this present experience, being at ease, not dis-ease, with this present moment experience of breathing in and breathing out. Each moment, each breath, unique, wonderful and special. This connection between here and the whole universe, between this moment and a whole lifetime. Just breathing. And each breath being unique, wonderful and special. And each breath is part of a whole life. A lifetime of breath, a lifetime of breathing. Each one unique, wonderful and special. Each one part of a greater whole, a greater life. Unique, wonderful and special. So as I start to come to the end of this meditation, maybe I can just reflect, how do I feel in my heart? Do I feel at ease or dis-ease? Do I feel agitated or calm, peaceful, tranquil? What is this experience? What is the tone? What is the ambience? It's a bit like a restaurant. You go in and you sit down and you would say, what's the atmosphere of that place like? What's the tone? What's the ambience like? You know, maybe your family members might say to you, how did it feel? How do you feel? And this is my chance to investigate, how do I actually feel in my heart right now? Is this calm? Is this peaceful? Or do I feel stiff? Do I feel arrogant? Do I feel egotistical? Do I feel superior? How do I feel in my heart right now? What is the experience of being here in this heart? Am I better than somebody else? Am I superior to others? Or do I feel inferior right now? What is the feeling in my heart? Am I judging myself? Am I judging others? What is the feeling in my heart right now? Do I feel haughty? Do I feel elitist? Or do I feel inferior? What's this feeling in my heart like? What is its tone? What's its flavor? What's its nuance? What's its fragrance? How does it feel? How does it feel to be unique, wonderful, and special? How does it feel? It's an unusual meditation, isn't it?
I'm clear now.
I don't know if I want to go into details on that one. So, does anybody feel agitated or disturbed? No. Is this, or do you feel the same way now as before you came in here, do you think? It's an unusual meditation, this one. Yeah, very peaceful, isn't it? So the flavor of this meditation is peace, I think. I can't speak for your experience, I can only speak for my own, but when I do this meditation, it's very, very peaceful, very quiet, very still. So this quality of the mind is what we call samadhi or concentration. My mind feels quite concentrated. That's the word. This is a lousy word. A translation in English is, if you're looking up meditation, they'll say this is concentration meditation. Now you know what the experience of concentration is, and now you know how bad that word is translated. So Ajahn Brahm usually tells us this is calm and peace. You feel calm and peaceful. Do you think calm and peaceful is how you feel? Do you feel concentrated? Concentration has a very negative meaning, doesn't it? It's kind of like this. You know, concentrate on your studies or something. So this is the flavor, it's concentration or calm, peaceful, tranquility. The mind is more condensed, it's more solid, it's more, you know, it's more present. And it's very interesting that we can kind of become concentrated on an idea, on a concept. A very unusual concept that we move from this idea of the little child and how that child just merges into the team, you know. Maybe we were rooting for France or Croatia, and you know, at times we can't distinguish without the number on their back, without the commentator telling us the name. We don't know who it is really, you know. And so there's this strange thing that we are all individuals, we're all unique, we're all wonderful. But yet we're part of a community, we're part of a whole. You know, so this is the Armadale group, the Armadale meditation group. Or I'm one of the Bodhinyana monks. You know, I don't have an identity in some ways. And it's very interesting that that this is having a healthy sense of self, that I feel at peace with myself. And when I don't feel at peace with myself, I will feel inferior or superior or deluded about myself. So when we feel superior to others, you know, we take that I'm better than somebody else, and we make it toxically charged emotionally, where I'm better than somebody else and I'm superior. You know, so there's no doubt that there was one soccer player called Kylian Mbappé, I think is how you pronounce his name. He's the French striker, 19 years old, he scores a goal in the World Cup final. Like, the guy is an incredible talent in soccer. I am not as good as Mbappé in soccer. He is better than me, but he is not superior. Okay? There's a big distinguishment between somebody. Every one of us in this room has a talent and has a skill that's better than somebody else. I'm sure some of you in the room can write. You have a much better handwriting. You can spell better than I can do. Maybe you speak languages that I don't do. You know, we all have talent. We all have skills. We're all better than other people in other areas. But we're not, that doesn't make us superior. And also, the converse is true. We're not as skillful as others. We're not as financially well endowed. We're not as young or beautiful or athletic as others. But that doesn't make me inferior. But there is this process in our mind that if we're healthy about things, you know, we can kind of laugh at our incompetency. I laugh at my spelling mistakes. I laugh at my inadequacies. I can laugh at my inability to do things. You know, today I was painting one of the cars. Let me tell you, it's not a great job. It definitely looks like a dodgy paint job of a car. Let me tell you, it's very humiliating to know that I am doing a dodgy job on the car, and everybody's going to see this pie ball going around. You know, it's like, this is not perfect. But I am not inferior. You know, I'm doing the best I can. Okay? I'm not going to send the car out for whatever body panel beater and the spray job. A couple of grand jobs so that people can go look, you know, for our drivers to go and bash it again. Anyway. So, it's getting a $50 tin of paint, and that's what we're spending on it. And I've got a little kid's paintbrush, and I'm painting away all the dings. But inside my head, there's this kind of thing. I'm powerless, and I'm weak, and I'm sort of slightly ashamed, and what a lousy job, and somebody else could have done better than this. And I didn't even have the... We were thinking of going to Bunnings afterwards to get some acetone so I could clean off things and sand down a little bit. But I didn't even have money. So I can find all these areas in my life to be critical about myself and inferior. That's if I want to. If I want to be very toxic with myself, or I can just laugh and go, I it's kind of funny that I'm not how to say, I'm not better. I am financially disadvantaged. I'm a monk. I have no money, and I don't have the power to fix these things, and I don't have the skill, and I don't have the tools, and I don't have the spray paint shop job to do this, you know, proper job. But I can choose to be. Not having, but not at the same time not inferior. But all the time in our life, whenever we meet, whenever we encounter another person, we immediately are trying to assess: is this person, better than me, the same as me, or inferior to me? And when we add this label, superior or inferior, to it, I'm inferior or they're inferior to me, then that's where this charge and difficulty starts to arise. You know? So, okay, the French team were better than the Croatian team, but they're not inferior or superior, if you know what I mean, from a toxically, kind of a charged sense. And, the Croatians were very respectful that they, that they acknowledged the French had played better and they had played well and they deserved to win the thing, but they were happy with their game, that they had played very well. It had been a great game. It had been a great opportunity to play in the World Cup, to have made it in the World Cup, to be a small country, 4.5 million people or 4 million people, to play France, and so on. It's the story in our head. And being able to breathe in to this thing, bring it back to the breath, and just that it's just this breath, it's just this moment, and let's not, add a toxic charge, add a label to it that this is superior or this is inferior. It's just breathing, and this is unique, wonderful, and special, and yet this is also part of a community. It's part of a greater whole, and this has worth in its own way. It's once we start labeling, once we start putting the categories in there, better than, the same as, or worse than. The two obvious ones are inferior or superior. I'm better than you, I'm superior to you, or I'm inferior to you. Another one is deluded, where we're all the same. We're all the same, bud. There's no difference. It doesn't matter. We're not all the same. I am not the same as Mappe in soccer, or I don't have the same talents. We're all in fact unique. So if we can bring it back to this reality that all of us, every one of us in this room, are unique, wonderful, and special, and we're also paradoxically part of a community, and just breathe into that kind of that thing, that existence. The top of my head is unique, wonderful, and special. The back of my head is unique, wonderful, and special. My eyes are unique, wonderful, special, and they're, but they're part of this whole body. Because sometimes you can sort of think, well, my eyes are really important to me. If I lost my eyes, if I lost my vision, that would be the end of the world. But I assure you, if you lost the back of your head, that would be a really bad show as well, and it wouldn't be that you look ugly; you'd be dead. The back of your head is really important. So we can put so much value into some things into our life, and they actually don't have an intrinsic value of themselves. They're just part of this whole, part of this community, part of this life. Each breath is important, and this breath is part of a whole run of breaths. you know, if somebody is breathing too loud for a while. Okay, but it's in a whole run of life. It's just it's a few bad breaths. You know what I mean? Like, it's not an inferior breath. It's like somebody was having a superior, you know. It reminds me, a friend of mine he's a small, scrawny guy, and we were at a pub drinking, and it was a rugby club, you know, so everybody was just really massive in this pub, and he was kind of small and scrawny. Actually, he was a winger in his day, but he was up at the bar, and he got bumped in the queue by this big rugby guy who went in ahead of him, and this big guy got his drinks ahead of my friend who had been waiting in queue, about, you know, a couple of pints, and he had them in his hands, and he turned around and somebody bumped into him and they spilt all over him, you see, and my friend was just very small, he turned around and said, "Oh, that was a superior moment." But, you know, we rarely acknowledge some moments as superior. We can enjoy, you know, that kind of news that all of the kids have made it out of the cave. We can enjoy the World Cup, that it was a very satisfying event to have been able to see or watch, or if you follow the cycling. And there's, by the way, the ladies' tour is also going on at the moment.
Tennis.
Huh?
Tennis.
And the tennis, yes. Dvorak won.
Djokovic,
sorry, how you pronounce it, Djokovic. And he was in bits before, and I mean, he wasn't, you know, he got his act together in the end. But, you know, and it's all mental. Very much mental game that they're playing, you know. And we can connect with their weaknesses and their foibles. That we too would. I mean, could you put any of us on the world stage? We'd probably have a heart attack or something. You know, it's so hard to play. I mean, during the World Cup, Messi couldn't perform, and that guy is God. You know, he's still like the greatest player ever, and he couldn't perform at all. Just the weight of the pressure on his shoulders. You know, they were talking about one of the French players who was, you know, he had to take a penalty or something. And he said, you know, he had to play this mental trick of pretending that it was just practice, and he wasn't actually at the World Cup, actually kicking a ball, you know, for a penalty. He was training. You know, for 1 minute he had to tell himself, this is training. You know, it's a bit like we're doing this, like, it's just breathing. This breath is unique, wonderful, and special. This is unique, wonderful, and special. You know, when we have those gremlins coming up saying, you know, you're a mess, you're hopeless, you're pathetic, you know, that kind of tape that goes off, and it's like, oh my God. You know, breathe in, breathe in, breathe in, come back to the breath. This is unique, wonderful, and special, and this is, you know, I'm part of a whole community, part of a, you know, a member of a team as well. You know, especially when I'm around negative people who are very critical of themselves, I have to kind of, you know, mind my own business and have boundaries with them and say, I'm not going to let that person's tape creep into my life. That, you know, where they're judging things and everything isn't good enough, everything's not good enough. You know, I'm sure that there's a couple of people who can come over and inspect my car job, and it will not pass muster with them. That's for sure. But I've got to be okay with it, and this is okay, you know? This is okay.
Maybe you should think of your car like an oil painting. You know, when you look at an oil painting, do you suppose it looks...
This is definitely pointicule, you know what I mean? I don't know if you're pointicule, the dot like a dot matrix job. No, but I mean, what's even worse is I have to do that on every brush stroke. That this, you know, because I shouldn't be hand painting it, it should be spraying it, and it isn't. This I'm having to do with a bloody kid's little paintbrush, and I don't even have Turp acetone to dilute down the paint, so it's getting really thick and skinny and everything. But it's fine, like, it's okay, you know, it's okay, you know. See, you have to do it as I'm doing a lousy job, go, I go, this is a lousy job, it's okay, this is enough, this is good enough, we're not sending this out for $2,000 or $3,000 worth.
Have you improved it, or?
Yeah, definitely.
It used to be really bad then before.
Yeah, we get second-hand cars.
Yeah.
Had 14 years of dings and rust and not been taken care of. And now it's getting a lot of love. You know? But I'm just giving it as an example. Like, we all face these things in our life. You know, unless... like, even if you're a person who could magically wave the wand... of, you know, you're a billionaire and you can make things happen, and, you know, everything can be perfect. Even there you will suffer, you know. And that takes a little empathy for us to see that kind of, that even such people who have such wealth have their difficulties too, for sure. So I like this meditation because it really helps break down in my mind this craziness that goes on of judging things superior, inferior, or the same as, when the reality is that this is different, this is unique, wonderful, and special, you know. And that connection, that wherever we are, in like in this room, we have a very diverse community. Everybody in this room is unique, wonderful, and special, and that is the connection that we all have with each other. That I am unique, wonderful, special, and you are, and you are, and you are, and you are, and we are the Armadale Meditation Team. You know, we can be always move in and out of this thing of being unique, wonderful, and special, and also part of a community, part of a greater whole. You know. And that's the movement, and we're not inferior or superior. We may be better or worse than in some ways, you know, I meaning like skillful or unskillful, or richer or poorer, or, you know, more endowed or less endowed or whatever it is, that's fine, but not that label. Be careful of that label. And that label is conceit. That label is conceit. I am better than, I am the same as, or I am inferior to, whereas the reality is this is unique, wonderful, and special. And this paradoxically is also part of a greater whole, part of the greater community. And one of the reasons that I really focused on this line, unique, wonderful, and special, is when Buddhist monks become fully enlightened, you know, like, it's not like the World Cup and you go up and you get the trophy and you say to the Buddha, you know, scored my goal and I've got my World Cup thing here. When monks would report to the Buddha that they had become fully enlightened, they would say, this is unique. This is unique. You know? They were no longer inferior or superior or the same as. This was unique. That they could be themselves.
Excuse me, how did they know that they were enlightened?
It's an experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like that transition, if you were doing the meditation, you can do it again. There's a transition from where the kid is there and the kid becomes part of the team. I mean, if you can look at it the next time, you've got the ESPN or Sports Channel, look at it again. You'll see this happening all the time in front of us, where you see your friends in a group or something like that, or you see your kids, or you think you see your kids and you're mistaken. And you go, oh, I'm sorry, I mistook you. But actually, it's in that confusion, that moment in there, of where we lose our identity, you know, into a group. You know, but it's like that experience. There's an experience in the heart of where we stop that process of identification, where we don't label ourselves or others. So it becomes a process that this is unique. You know, this breath is unique, this moment is unique. Okay. Rather than I am inferior, superior, which is a lot of what we're actually doing all the time. All the time we have a dialogue, we have a story going on in our mind, and that's what's driving, at a fundamental level, that's what's driving our difficulties, our genuine difficulties with the world, is that conceit, that sense of self, I am, fill in the blank, I am beautiful, I am ugly, I am poor, I am rich, I am, you know, fill it all in. And with that feeling, from that idea will start to arise shame. Shame is that judgment feeling on top of it. You know, that toxic feeling of inferiority and judgment, and I don't belong in this community, and I don't belong in this place, and I don't belong in myself, and, you know, that's the shame. And then from the shame, the anxiety, the fear, the anger, boom, there it is. All the dominoes start to fall. But the original culprit was the thought, I am, fill in the blank, inferior, superior, the same as. And that's not what I am. It's just, this is a process. That this is unique, this is wonderful, this is special. At least I try to put some affirmation on it that I like myself. So this is quite a deep thought at the start, coming back to it. So in this first step of enlightenment, this experience changes that, of where a monk who has attained that kind of thing, that is their experience. They no longer can be fooled ultimately that I am somehow superior or inferior or the same as, and it starts to break down and break down and break down to complete enlightenment, to where it just really is, becomes an experience. It's an experience of how we approach life, how we engage with self and other, you know, and we stop judging ourselves. Fundamentally, the machinery is broken, where one can no longer hold the view or the perception or that this is superior in some ways. I'll give you an example. I was teaching this meditation in Ireland, actually, and a friend of mine had come to the class, and he's a dentist, and he works as an associate in somebody else's practice, you know, so he works a couple of days in somebody else's practice. And this person was younger. He actually had gone back as a late student to college, and he was about 10 years older than his business partner, and he was very highly qualified. He was an engineer, and then he went back to become a dentist. And he's very good, very skillful, you know. So he was always fixing up her botched jobs as a dentist, and he was a big reason her practice is doing very, very well. And there was a kind of an aggro building up in the relationship, and he was in the middle of this meditation, just like I was guiding you on this, and he said he nearly felt like laughing in the middle of, you know, like busting out laughing, you know, in the middle of it. And he told me afterwards that he realized that he wasn't superior to the person he was working with. He was better than, but he wasn't superior. And once that toxic charge had gone, he no longer felt that resentment that, you know, that his work was pushing her business forward and he was older than her and all this kind of thing. All that charge had gone, and the difficulty of working together in this partnership, in this business, had gone. You know, because that idea had crept in. He had mistaken being better than, and he definitely is better than his business partner, but he wasn't superior. And once he saw himself as superior, he thought it was very funny. You know, he thought he was ridiculous. And that's the funny thing about wisdom. Wisdom finds it funny. You know, when you really see the our own stupidity, it's funny as hell. It's really funny. And that's when you know you've had a moment of insight or wisdom arising. We can really laugh at ourselves. And one of my teachers in Sri Lanka, he was a really good meditation teacher, but he was telling me about he had spent time in the forest with the forest monk, and he had asked him, he thought he was very, highly evolved person, and he asked for his, what was his perspective on the world, and he said the world's a funny place. He said sometimes it's tragic, but nevertheless funny. You know, and he was sort of, that's, you know, a wisdom. It's this quality of wisdom to you really know you've broken through on certain things when it's funny as hell. It is funny, you know. It can be bitterly tragic, but it's nevertheless funny, you know. It's funny. And so he had found it really funny in the middle of this meditation. He said he nearly had to put his fist in his mouth to stop laughing so much. It was so funny that he had thought he was superior, you know. And to this day, he's really good friends with this person. And the whole thing just totally dissolved in that meditation, you know. So it's a very toxic thing to believe that we're superior or inferior, you know. And we can have a propensity or a habit, a habituated thinking that I am inferior or that I'm superior. And it makes us very difficult to live with and be with. You know, we can alienate other people from us, or be difficult to live with, or other people are difficult. We can recognize that they're superior or arrogant or something like that, or haughty, or that they're constantly inferior or something like that. They have an inferiority complex going on. Or we can realize it in ourselves. But a lot of it is to start to just nudge the game back to this like inner truth that this is unique, wonderful, and special. So like I put that idea out to you, just as those Arahants did. You know, when they really broke through and they would announce to the Buddha, you know, they wouldn't say, "I am fully enlightened." They would just say, "This is unique." And he would say, "So it is." And that was his acknowledgement of them, and it was no more. It wasn't like a World Cup parade, Champs-Élysées, 1 million people. No, it was a very silent, personal victory to be finished with that disease of conceitedness. So this conceit is a very, very powerful wrong view, what we call a wrong view, that I am superior to, that I am inferior to, or that I am equal to. We're not. We're all unique, wonderful, and special.
It takes a long time to
yeah.
To think about that.
Yeah, it does. You need to breathe into it a lot. You got a lot of breaths. Each one is unique, wonderful, and special. You know? It's okay. What matters is it's like a 10,000-mile journey. You know, it begins with the step, and just keep marching. If you've got the step, keep stepping. You know. And it's not the destination that matters. It's the journey. You know. So you know, right cause, right effect. You know, and that's a little bit of faith. You know, that we know that good causes have good effects. You know, and worry more about the ingredients than the cake. You know what I mean? That we have some manageability over, you know.
Yeah, I think sometimes when you criticize or judge or form an opinion on that side, if you can always think there's always another side to that story, that criticism, that judgment. So if you're thinking the worst of somebody or criticizing something, if you have in your mind also, well, there might be a reason why that, you know, so you, there's always two sides to every sort of observation, criticism, judgment. Think of the from the other perspective of that person.
But I'd like to suggest, you know, that idea they call it reframing is really helpful, that's for sure. But I mean, when somebody's really bugging us off, that's really hard.
It is.
Yeah, like, you know, somebody's like really, you know, they're standing over us. You know, they're really standing over us. That's not an easy thing to do. But what's really interesting to me is when I'm getting stood over, because often I'm thinking inferior. Like I mentioned, the paint job. I had an imaginary person behind me standing over me. You know, I didn't even need a real person there, you know, and it's taking care of that little guy that feels stood over, acknowledging that here I am right now feeling stood over, and hearing that inferiority going on and breathing into it, going, you know, this is unique, wonderful, and special, like breaking the tape. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter whether, you know, we run into that person who is, you know, broken and hurt and has their superiority thing going on or their inferiority thing going on, and they're a complete drama. At the end of the day, if I don't have those buttons in here for them to push, then it doesn't matter. It's just their drama, you know. And then I can kind of get into like, oh yeah, I can really see that's a wounded person, and they've got these childhood things going on. Maybe it's some childhood, you know, thing. I can really see it. I can see that this person's been really, you know, hammered in life or something like that. But, you know, for me now, a lot of the trigger is my own internal feelings of like that's happening for me. Oh, cripes, you know. Let me deal with this. I can deal with my business, you know. I can tell myself a story about what their business is, but at the end of the day, they're telling me, hang on, here, you've got your inferiority story going on here, buddy. You better take care of, I can take care of myself. And that's very empowering. You know, that's where this bhavana, this cultivation of the heart, really kicks into gear. And we do this sort of, like, practice here. You know, when I used to play squash, and, you know, you go into the squash court by yourself and beat the, you know, the wall, the ball against the wall. You don't need another player. But you're doing that so that when there is another player, you have some chance, you know. Or you can do the same with ping pong. You can push the table against the wall and start, you know, playing against the wall. So that when you do run into the difficult people in life, so what you're doing right now is, you know, I'm programming you to at least have heard some one day in your life that there is a story other than I am better than, the same as, or inferior to. That you know, how do I get out of this conceitedness? Hang on, there is this is unique, wonderful, and special. This is okay, and there's a paradox. I'm also part of the team. It's okay, you know. There's a song that I like in Ireland. It goes, all God's creatures have a place in the choir. Some sing lower, some sing higher. Some shout out on the telephone wire. Some just clap their hands, their paws, anything they've got. You know, it's a line of a sort of an Irish song. But, you know, we've all got our place in the choir. Some sing lower and some sing higher. You know, we're all unique, wonderful, and special. We're all part of the choir. You know? That's what makes this place an interesting world. Each breath is unique and wonderful. I assure you, there is no two breaths the same. No. No. And that's amazing. When you look in detail, no two moments are the same. People will tell you it's boring. Boring is just anger. It's bored. No, it isn't. No two moments are the same. Yeah.
Often when I do the breathing in and out for a while, then all of a sudden I go, breath, you know, stops, and then, well, that's got to do with anxiety or something.
No, not necessarily. Yeah, no, it starts out by being relaxed.
Yes.
Actually, we start out being relaxed, and then we think we're not breathing, and then we get anxious that... You know, you can also get another experience of where it's like an elevator dropping. You know, like, you know, I think we've been in that, where the elevator doesn't, is sort of jerks. So that's actually getting very calm and peaceful. And then there's like a slight lack of awareness creeps in, because we get so, things become so quiet. And then we think that there's nothing happening, and, you know, It's almost very primitive. Like, it's very interesting. I was with somebody recently who was dying, actually, and I had to lift them out of their chair. Actually, it was very silly, but they were in. I had them in a chair. We had them in the middle of the kitchen, and they were on an electric. You know those folding electric chairs, and the bloody electric cord got stuck. And I had to, it gets a bit ridiculous, but here's this person dying, and I had to up the chair so that it could unpin from the damn lead. And in the meantime, this person fell off the chair. So anyways, like, sometimes death is a funny place. It's a bit surreal. Like, so this person's falling off the chair. I have to get him back on and get my lead out and not electrocute everybody. And anyway, it was a nice funeral. We did it well for her. And she was 99. That was good innings. Yeah. But it's really funny, like, even though she was almost dying, this sliding off the chair, she actually woke up. I was quite alert after that for a while. It's just something really, it's like a very primitive thing in the mind. Like, if you feel like you're dropping, that it kind of wakes us up again. So those are the cycles that you mentioned, that you're going through. But you can, with more skill or fullness, you become more okay with just free-falling. you know, it's almost it can take a little bit of acclimatization to it, but not be frightened of that experience of that dropping, you know, where, you know, you do it often enough and you realize I am sitting in my chair and it's okay, and just that willingness to let go of the whole body and let it go and relax, then you get down into deeper and deeper stages of relaxation. You know, but some people get really frightened by that kind of dropping sensation and they get put off. And in that way, that can be a real, quite a pity if you can't overcome that fear. So tonight's meditation is generally speaking, it's not a very exciting one. It's very calm and peaceful, and but I'd like you to think about what's missing. You know, that kind of constant buzz in the mind, that agitation, that pressure, that judgment, that evaluation, that's maybe missing from your mind right now. So that's one of the beauties of this kind of what we call samatha or calming meditations, is that they create a space in the mind for a while where that kind of natural tendency to judge is gone for a short period of time, and it gives you a window to move through life with. And we have to, you know, we can get addicted to the drama, we can get addicted to fighting it out with people who we think we're better than, you know. We can get really into a trap and a groove with people. And this is a reset in those relationships. You know, and this is a way out of where, not just simply reframing and stuff like that, but just to, hang on, this is my business and this is what I can do, and other people can follow their own path, you know. Like I can, you know, remember very much like my parents fought it out, like, you know, it was trench warfare. Just, you know, both of them were trying to be right, you know, and that's the problem with it. We can all be right, you know. We can all be right, meaning like this is unique, wonderful, and special, you know. And when we are being better than, or you know, we get into this battle of wills with other people, you know, we're not actually taking care of our own business. And this is our business. What we're doing tonight, this is our business. To really get down to this machinery of conceitedness, you know, who I am, who do you think I am, you know, this is unique, wonderful, and special, this is who I am. Okay, we'll wrap. I'll hand you over to our incredible president, who is unique, wonderful, and special.
Thank you very much, Andrew.